Last pasuk in Perek Yud Tes. Perek Yud Tes, pasuk Lamed. We saw last week very horrific events. This wayfarer was staying in the town of Giva, and this gang of riffraff came. They wanted to abuse him. What ended up happening was that they abused his wife to the extent that she died, and he, in a very violent, scandalous kind of way, reacted very bizarrely. And basically what he did was, as we saw last week, he actually cut her body up and sent it around into 12 parts, and sent it around to each of the Sanhedrin of each of the different Shvatim in order to demand a very strong reaction on their part. This is the recap of last week's unfortunate events. And where we stand now is that's it. We finished with that individual story, and now we are moving on to the national reaction to this story. So, that doesn't say. It says that he did. It says that the husband did.
The husband.
Yeah. Also, nice
big tzaddik.
No, he's not a tzaddik. He's not a tzaddik. But as we explained last week, he was not he was a violent man, not a tzaddik at all. Yet, at the end of the day, what happened was unexpected. He did not think that it would be taken to this extent. He thought that they would abuse her, what would happen, but that she should actually be killed. This was something that was shocking. And he was demanding vengeance. But that's not really the point as far as the Jewish people are concerned. What he wants, the question is, how did the Jewish people react to this story? So now, what happens is, you have this Sanhedrin, the court of each of the different Shvatim, receive this terrible package. And as we already discussed, there was a machlokes. According to Ralbag, he actually sent a letter along with the package describing what happened. And what happened? V'haya. So we begin pasuk lamed. V'haya kol haroye. And it was anybody who saw this. V'omar. They respond. L'maisa. The Jewish people boiled with indignation. They said lo nihiyasa v'lo nir'asa kazois. There has never been, and there has never been observed, such an incident. From the day that the Jewish people left Mitzrayim until this time. Such incidents were absolutely non-existent among the Jewish people. This goes on. We might say, in basically any country, but such a thing had never occurred among the Jewish people. And now they're making two points. First of all, it never occurred and it was never observed. Meaning what they're saying is there's two elements here, there's two levels to the crime. Never occurred. But what happened here was not just that it occurred, but that it occurred in a public way. And that made the crime all the worse. That there should be a situation where people should feel comfortable doing this in the streets magnified the threat that the Jewish people now felt to their standards all the more. Simulachem Aleh. Therefore they said, let's take note of this. Utsu, let's take counsel. Vidaberu, and let us discuss this. Meaning, in other words, let's take counsel, let's decide what we should do. After we investigate this story properly, what should we do? Let's articulate a conclusion, and let's make plans as to how to carry it out. Drastic measures are required here. So now, what happens? We move into the next perek. Vayetzu. Now here we have to note, but because here we're going to see the Jewish people coming forth in their full glory. Let's try to think in practical terms. This was a horrific story. What would the reaction be expected to be? So let's note. Vayetzu kol b'nei Yisrael. All of the b'nei Yisrael turned out. Vatikohel ha'edo ki'ish echad. Everybody got together like one man. Limidon va'ad Be'er Sheva. From Don until Be'er Sheva, the Mefarshim say, this denotes from the northeast corner to the southwest corner. The wave of indignation and that spontaneous turning out, that everybody felt that they had to do something, swept across the entire country. We'll see soon. There was only one town that wasn't involved. We'll get there soon, besides Binyamin, I mean. No, men. Be'eretz HaGilad. Whoever relevant. Be'eretz HaGilad, El Hashem HaMitzvah. They all gathered to Hashem, to Mitzvah. Let's note what's going on. This was a righteous reaction. They got together, felt they have to have an emergency meeting with Hashem in order to take stock of what's going to be going on. What is the implication of what just happened now on the Jewish people in general? This is a national calamity. This is not just an isolated incident. This is a national calamity. All of the heads of the Jewish people convened. Kol Shivtei Yisrael Bikal Am. All of the tribes of Klal Yisrael. Bikal Am Ho Elikim. They gathered as the people of Hashem. Meaning this was not a mob getting together. This was the Jewish people coming together as the people of Hashem. These were, as the people had said, Nasav and Nishma. They're coming in this capacity. They understood that now they are being charged with a holy mission. This must be dealt with as the people of Hashem. If they want to be able to retain and say that we live up to our title of the people of Hashem, we have to be here now. 400,000 people convened. Now again, this is not the entire nation at the end of the day. It wasn't every last man. But, in terms of a showing, a spontaneous showing of people spontaneously gathering together at that spot, 400,000 people came by foot, Shelev Charev, ready for war. Meaning they were ready to do anything, whatever it takes, to set this situation straight. So let's just understand what's behind this reaction. We're seeing a very drastic reaction, and we have to note that. Because again, as much as we were horrified by the story of last week, from here, for people to actually drop everything. I'd expect you to react to such a thing, terrible. But for people to drop everything, drop all of their affairs, drop their land, drop everything and travel. This was a travel. To travel, to convene at Mitzvah, was a very big sign of the spirit of the Jewish people at that time. Again, keep in mind also that traveling wasn't an hour away. It was when people came from all around Eretz Yisrael. So people came to days for travel. They understood that this is something that cannot, there's no way of just going back to a normal life. Something has to happen now. Otherwise, all of Klal Yisrael is on hold. History of Klal Yisrael is on hold. We're at a crossroads now. If we don't react here, all of the history of Klal Yisrael is getting off course. This is what's going on here. Let's understand where this was coming from. The Jewish people had recently come out of the Midbar. The Midbar was a 40-year training program in which Hashem was elevating the Jewish people to standards in which He expected a very high level of performance. And yes, once again, as we said, the things that we saw happen last week were normal in the nations around. But this was exactly the point. Hashem was raising the Jewish people to live according to super normal standards. Above normal, above the norms of the rest of the world. And Hashem trained them in this way, in a harsh way. It was a very rigorous training program. On the one hand, the Jewish people were already used to the idea that an incident among Klal Yisrael can bring repercussions upon the entire nation if they don't react right. They have been trained well to this idea, but it's even more than that. They understood that there's something much greater at stake here, which was really the purpose of that 40-year training program. If, as a nation, you want to be able to retain the presence of the Shekhinah among you, the nation has to be operating at a very high level, with no room for slips and slides. And therefore the Jewish people understood that their entire essence is being threatened here. Have we reached the point where that's it? The influence of the nations around is starting to seep in? If so, from here downhill is just a quick slide. And they were determined not to let that happen. So yes, this was the pious Jewish nation responding with great and pious indignant, ready to take on the situation and to stop at nothing again. Of course, people dropped everything. We're going to continue agriculture, we're going to continue tending to our fields. All of history might be stopping now. This was the way they view it. All of history might be stopping now. If we can't get the sanctity, if we can't get the standards of the Jewish people back on track, our history has fallen off the cliff. So what happens? Vayishme'u b'nei Binyamin. The people of Binyamin heard. Now by the way, again I want to note, this was not a mob scene. That's why the Pasuk stresses, it was all the tribes of Klal Yisrael with their heads. It was a very orderly convention. Right? They came in a disciplined way, in an orderly way. The tribes weren't mixing. They were in order, ready to take orders, ready to hear. What are the Sanhedrin going to decide? What's going to have to happen now? Meanwhile, something is going on, right? All of Klal Yisrael, there are tremors going through all of Klal Yisrael. The people of Binyamin, what's with them? Vayishma'u b'nei Binyamin. The people of Binyamin heard, ki olu b'nei Yisrael ha-mitzvah. That all of Klal Yisrael congregated to mitzvah. Mitzvah, once again, mitzvah was the place of the presence of the Shekhinah. They were getting it to get together with the Shekhinah to try to see what could be done to hold on to the presence of the Shekhinah and to consult with the Shekhinah. What should we do now? And the people of Binyamin heard this. Vayomru b'nei Yisrael dabru eicha niyasa roa azos. And the people of Klal Yisrael were getting there to really investigate the matter. They said, let's discuss, how could such a terrible thing happen? So the Mefarshim say, why are we stressing here? The people of Binyamin heard. Saying that the people of Binyamin heard, but they didn't see it, they didn't deem it necessary to show a presence there, to show we are, as much as all the rest of you, want to be a part of figuring out how to purge the effect of what just happened, how to counteract what just happened. No, they heard what was going on, but they stayed home. Vayan ish halevi. So they started, they questioned this husband. They said to the Levi, Isha Isha Hanyotzacha, the husband of the woman who had been killed. What happened here? Vayomer, and he said, Hagiv Osa Ashele Binyamin Basi, Aniu Pilagshi Lolo. Me, my Pilagesh, and I came to the town of Giva of Shevet Binyamin. Vayakumo Olai Balea Giva, and the people of Giva came against me. Vayasoibo Olai Es Habayis Laila. And they surrounded the house I was in at night. Oisi dimu laharoi, and they were ready to kill me. Ves pilagshi inu, and they abused my pilegesh vatamois, and she died. So the truth is, you were asking about him throwing, pushing her out. The Mefarshim note that he didn't say that part. He didn't say that part. He was embarrassed. No, part of this was accompanied by serious investigation. The Mefarshim say, this is what was going on. They heard his presentation. But part of what we saw earlier, when the Pasuk says, Dabru, Utsu, etc., it meant, let's investigate this properly, meaning this was not an off-the-cuff sort of reaction. This was investigated properly, it was thoroughly studied, and the reaction was planned. What's that? Oh, so let's see. So he says, this part I guess he was less embarrassed about. I took the body of my pilegesh, I cut it up, and I sent it all around the estates of Klal Yisrael, because these people have committed terrible immorality and a disgusting act, meaning besides the immorality involved, they said that the fact that it was done so blatantly, as we said, magnified the crime even more. So hine kulchem b'nei Yisrael. He says, okay, so now look, all of you are the b'nei Yisrael. As the b'nei Yisrael, it's up to you to ensure that the standards of b'nei Yisrael are held up. Havu lochem davar ve'etzah haloy. Figure out. What's that? He's finishing off his little speech. You figure, and I leave it to you. You figure out, discuss it, reach the decisions. Vayokom kola on ki ish echad. And everybody arose as one lemar. They said, Loi neleich ish le ahaloi veloi nasur ish le beisai. Nobody is going to leave until we decide, until we resolve this issue. Again, we have to note this. We said before, this is really bringing out the spirit of the Jewish people at that time. There was no army. Right? This was a spontaneous response of people all around Eretz Yisrael. There were no group emails at that time, right? It was a spontaneous response of people all around Eretz Yisrael. We heard what had happened, the word spread. They gathered together, they dropped everything, they left their families, they left their business, and they said, nobody is going home. None of us from the 400,000 are going to leave. Until we see what has to be done now. Ve'atah. So now they're planning, sitting down to plan strategy. Zeh ha'davar. Well, there was the Sanhedrin. There was a Sanhedrin, and each tribe had its Sanhedrin. There was a level of leadership. But again, it was not an organized army. It wasn't, you see that people were getting together now in a spontaneous way. As we'll see now. Now, here's how we're going to approach our plan towards Giva. First of all, we're going to cast lots. We have to organize ourselves. Right? There's going to be an army now. I mean, they're preparing now for military action. This is what's going on. What the extent of it is going to be, we'll see as we go on. But they said we're going to take 10 to the 100. The Kol Shivtei Yisrael, for all the tribes of Klal Yisrael, Umeyale Elef, Ve'elef Lirvava, and we'll have 10 to the 100, 100 to the 1,000, 1,000 to the 10,000. In other words, we're going to divide the people. We're going to have the people who are going to actually prepare for war. As we'll see, the necessity will develop. And then there are the people who are going to be going back to work on provisions. Nobody's going home. People needed food. To go prepare provisions for the people, which to prepare for the Jewish people who will be approaching Geva of Binyamin, in order to rectify this terrible thing that they did among Klal Yisrael. And all the people of Klal Yisrael came together to the city, ki ish echad, as one man, chaverim, of all absolute unity. Now, the Jewish people were not, again, as we're saying now, this was a disciplined plan. This was not just people losing control and charging. And therefore, it started as follows. Vayishlechu shivtei Yisrael la'anashim b'chol shivtei binyan. They started by sending messengers to all the different tribes of Binyamin. Meaning, Binyamin was divided into families, divided into separate large families, which, ten large families, which each was kind of like its own separate, tribe in a sense. So what they tried to do was, they didn't even address Binyamin as a whole, because they figured they might meet resistance. They sent separate negotiation teams, and they sent separate emissaries to each of the different 10 families to try to convince each one separately to cooperate with them. Lema. So they sent these emissaries to them saying, look how terrible is what happened among you. Hand over the wicked people of Giva, unimisim, and we'll kill them. And we will eliminate the evil from Klal Yisrael. So let's see. Here's we're going to have to approach carefully to see exactly what's going on here. What's that? Who? Now, Giva was presumably one family. It was one area. V'lay avu b'nyamin lishmoya b'koil achem b'nei Yisrael. And the people of Binyamin refused to cooperate with the rest of the Jewish people. So let's understand what's going on here. What's going on is as follows. As we said, technically, in terms of din, mishpat, according to the strict letter of the law, you could not impose a death sentence on the people who did this. Why? So we already explained. There's two levels to the story. Either because, according to Ramban's understanding and others, the Pilegesh didn't even have the status of a married woman. But even according to the Rambam, Pilegesh really just means Amo Ivriya that got married. So
the Ramban is the one who said that it's only
the Ramban. The Rambam.
So according to the Rambam,
she was really a regular wife. Okay, but whatever the case is, as we said last week, first of all, they had no intent to kill her. That they overdid what they did, and she died. But that wasn't their intent. But second of all, even in terms of the crime itself, even if she was really a married woman, there were no witnesses, and there was no formal hasra, meaning no witnesses who were going to testify. It was only the perpetrators who were there, and there was no formal hasra. So in terms of the strict letter of the law, there was no chiyuv misa. And here we already understand why Shevet Binyamin were resisting. But there's a din, and this is what the Jewish people were working with. There's a din that says, Bez din makim va'onshim sheloi min hadin, la'asos siog la'teira. Bez din, the Sanhedrin, have the authority to decide that the circumstances necessitate doing something outside the letter of the law in order to maintain the general welfare, spiritual or material, which, especially in those days, was completely intertwined, which is essentially how it is, in order to ensure the welfare of the people in general, in order to ensure the welfare of the Torah.
Did you put someone to death, though?
Yes. Yes. In fact, you see, precedents, much less drastic situations. There was a case where the Sanhedrin stoned a person, killed a person as a Machal Shabbos for doing an Issa Derabanan because it was a time when people were starting to take things lightly. So yes, Bezdin, Sanhedrin have the right to use their discretion to decide. Now, the circumstances warrant acting outside the letter of the law. And this is what they were doing now. They said, the Jewish people have become accustomed to living at a very high level of sanctity and standards, which requires a lot of conscientiousness. And it was worth the effort to have the Shekhinah among you, but the Jewish people were always operating on a high level of performance. As soon as we're starting to see a slide to the extent that the practices of the neighbors around us are starting to slip in, this is something extremely dangerous to the welfare of the Jewish people's history. And therefore, we have to take extreme measures here to completely eradicate anything that has to do with this. Oh, okay, so let's see. This was the approach that the Jewish people were taking here. And there are those that say that it was more than this. And this is actually the implication of the pasuk. they were not just demanding the debt. Now, this is going to be tough to swallow, but this is really in a big way bringing home the point. They were not just demanding the death of the perpetrators. They were demanding the destruction of the entire town of Gibeon.
With all of its people?
Every last person. Men, women, and children. That's shocking. This was a terrible decision. Terrible in terms of magnitude. But this was deemed necessary. Why? The way they saw it, and this was the way they operated at that time. And again, let's keep in mind that this is the way Hashem operated with the Jewish people. The way they saw it was that if such a situation was able to develop in that area, that shows that there was something wrong with the atmosphere of that area in general, and it's an infection that can spread, and it has to be amputated. In the other areas of the Jewish people, it's not just that there were a group of kids who did something wrong. But in the other areas of the Jewish people, and this is really the point of collective responsibility, which is a method that Hashem deals with the Jewish people, such a thing couldn't have happened. You know why? Because even if there would be one person who felt this way, let's try what the other chevra are doing, the atmosphere was such that he would never dare to express such thoughts to somebody else. If a situation was possible where one of these kids was able to actually have the guts to discuss it with another person, and it should actually turn out that there's a whole group of people who are willing to talk about these things, it shows that the air in that town was not properly charged with the Yiras Shamayim that permeated the entire Jewish people. And in the standards of those times, they saw this as a mortal threat to the Jewish people, to the extent that, yes, they deemed it justified to go and wipe out the entire town, just like you might amputate a diseased and infected limb. What's that? This is the way Rabbi Avigdor Miller always presented this story, and Das Seifrim says this as well. I have not found what it's based on, although one might say that that's actually a simple implication of the pasuk. The pasuk says, hand over the wicked people of the Gibeon, and we're going to kill them. So, again, I'm leaving it open. I did not say anybody say otherwise, but I did not find a clear earlier source for this. But this is clearly the way it's been presented by these two authorities.
I would think if they're so strict with their own, why aren't they going out Kal v'chomer and killing out all the Goyim like Hashem originally told them to?
The truth is that this is a good kasha. This was the sorry effect of the fact that they did not do that immediately good enough. But we have to remember that at that time, again, we're talking in the period immediately after the death of Yeshua. This was at the time where they had been busy with wars for quite a while. Right? The fact that it reached a point where they tired of wars, again, we saw that Hashem did hold that against them. But this was something that they already saw as even more of a threat, because to an extent you could say, and the truth is this was a big part of the mistake, okay, we are going to insulate ourselves from their influence, but once it's actually made its way into the Jewish people, this has to be dealt with immediately. This was the very, very drastic decision of the Jewish people, and we understand that the people of Binyamin resisted. The people of Binyamin may have said a couple of things.
Everybody was involved in the town, so Hashem destroyed the town.
Right.
Here, it was only a small group.
So you're asking, what's the justification of taking what was done by a handful of people and blaming the whole town for it?
I mean,
so the truth is, what?
Hashem didn't.
Well, the truth is that once again, in a general way, and here, this is the point that I want to bring home well. The Jewish people... Oh, okay. So the Jewish people saw that the way Hashem operated with them was that, yes, there's something called collective responsibility. Something happens, the broader community will be held responsible. The principle with that was that, yes, Hashem expected the atmosphere to be such that such things couldn't develop. And the fact that the atmosphere was not such is indeed an accusation against the whole town. These are things that are beyond our comprehension. But these were the standards that the Jewish people were living up to. And the concept we find, like Rabbi Dida just pointed out, the Mefarshim say that this was along the lines of the concept of Iran Yidachas. Where when a city goes off and serves Avodah Zarah, We wipe out everybody, women, children, everybody. The town is leveled to ground zero, quite literally. This was the decision of the Jewish people then once again, and here's the important point, it was outside the confines of the strict letter of the law. This was something that they deemed necessary to do. And therefore, we can understand that the people of Binyamin may have said, no, we don't agree with that call. Again, if you're talking strict halacha, halacha is halacha. But once you're talking about what are the measures that need to be taken, we don't agree with that call. Kill the people who did it. Don't kill everybody in the town. Or, might have been even more than that. They would say, 1 minute, we don't even agree to kill the people who did it. They aren't liable to death, al-pidin. Maybe we'll lock them up for the rest of their lives. There's all kinds of different, once we're talking outside the confines of halacha, there's all kinds of objections that the people of Binyamin might have raised. So, so let's see. So we'll see. Okay, so this is where we stand now. Now, the people of Binyamin refused. And now what happens? Vayasfu b'nei Binyamin min ha'orin ha'giv asa. The people of Binyamin gathered together to give up. Lotse slamil chaman b'nei Yisrael to defend Giva and go out to fight the Jewish people. Now here the Mefarshim say, we're going to discuss soon whether Binyamin were wrong in objecting. We'll discuss that soon. But the Mefarshim say that this already was too much of a crime. Even if we will see that it's not so clear who was right in this dispute between the Shvatim and Binyamin, but it's already a step further to actually go out and put your neck out to defend them, this already they're blamed for. You oppose it, fine, but to go actually risk your life to defend people who, that already is something that's clearly held against them.
So each of the tribes had their own police force?
Each of the tribes had their own Sanhedrin. And we're going to discuss that. Each tribe had its own Sanhedrin, had its own general Sanhedrin. Each tribe had more than one general Sanhedrin. But yes, each tribe had the means of dealing with problems within their tribe. Now, again, we're going to get back here. We're going to discuss exactly the finer elements of the dispute between Binyamin and the people of Israel. Who was right? Who was wrong? Which doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. Right? As is often the case, both could be wrong. We'll see. Now, Vayispakdu b'nei Binyamin v'yemahu me'orim. The people of Binyamin gathered together and they took a head count. 26,000 people, warriors, people bearing swords, which, by the way, was the entire Shevet Binyamin. 26,000 people was the entire Shevet Binyamin. Levad miyoshvei ha-Giva. Besides, that's outside of the residence of Giva. Hesbakdu shvamiyos ish bachur, from whom you had 700 quality warriors. Mikola omaze, shvamiyos ish bachur ito yad yaminoi. For all these people, you had 700 people. We want to show that the Bnei Binyamin were a formidable force. We'll see soon. It's 26,000 against 400,000. The Bnei Binyamin weren't hesitating. They're ready. Now, mikola omaze, from among these people, shvamiyos ish bachur ito yad yaminoi, were 700 people who were lefties. In those days, that was actually considered a mum. Now, I didn't discuss this. They were lefties. Left-handed. Which was actually considered a mum. It was considered a disability. And yet, these left-handed people, just trying to show what formidable fighters the people of Binyamin were, of these left-handed people, kol ze koilea be'even el asaro velo yachti. These people were such capable sling throwers, stones with slings, that they could all hit a target. If you put a hair on the target, these people would hit the hair invariably without missing.
Yeah, but wouldn't you have the elements of surprise at the left hand?
What's that? Yes.
Like Ehud.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we're going to see. They were definitely had what to say for themselves in terms of fighting. The Ish Yisrael.
You said that they used to be like mainly like
They weren't sophisticated fighters, yet they were capable. Let's see. The Ish Yisrael haspakdu levad mi Binyamin. Now, the rest of Klal Yisrael coming against Binyamin took a head count, and they were, yes, 400,000 warriors. Kol ze ish milchama. All of these were men ready for war. Meaning, again, what are we seeing here? That every last person who came to the meeting, there wasn't anybody who came to the meeting and kind of said, alright, I can't tell what's going on. Every last person who came to the meeting was there to go all the way. If it was the war was the decision, every last person was ready. We already saw it. There were the provisions units, etc. But everyone was ready to go all the way.
There were 700 lefties with Binyamin. What's the significance of that? And why don't they mention how many lefties
there are? Well, no, the reason that it's talking about the lefties is just in order to bring out how formidable Binyamin were as warriors. Okay. Now, Vayakumu Vayalu Beis El. And the Jewish people got up and they came to Beis El. Beis El really refers to Mepharshim saying not to the city of Beis El, why should they be going there per se. Rather, it refers to Shiloh, which was the Beis Kel. Literally, that was where the Mishkan was. They were coming again. These people were coming as warriors of Hashem. Vayishalu Beilokim. And they consulted Hashem, meaning they consulted the Urim Betum. Vayomu b'nei Yisrael, and the people of Yisrael said, "Miyale lano b'tchilo amilchama in b'nei Binyamin." Who should lead us in this battle against b'nei Binyamin? Vayomer Hashem Yehuda b'tchilo, and Hashem answered, "Yehuda should lead the battle." Okay. Vayakumu, so they got up. Bnei Yisrael Baboike, they got up in the morning, Vayachanu al Hagiva, and they camped out against Giva. Now here, before we move on, I just want to note, was this an overreaction? Was this an example of lack of leadership, of anarchy? So I want to draw on a pasuk from a few hundred years later. A pasuk in Hosea, Ben Yehuda notes this in this context. It's a pasuk in Hosea in which the Navi is criticizing the people of his time. And he says as follows: "Mimei ha-giv'a chatos Yisrael. Had you been in the time of Giva, you would have been guilty. Sham amdu. If the people of this time would have been then, loytasigim ba-giva milchama b'nei avlo, they would not have gone to war against the wicked people." This is the Nabi Hosea speaking to the people of his time. In other words, he's telling them, "You people have dropped. Had you been in the time of Giva, you would not have gone to war." So here we're seeing that this war was considered a war of piety that was drawn on by the Nevi'im in later generations. But let's see how things develop. And here things are going to take some surprising turns. Vayetze ish Yisrael amilchama in Binyamin. The people of Yisrael went out to fight Binyamin. Vayarchu itam ish Yisrael milchama el agiva. And they came out for warfare at Giva. Now what happens? Vayetzu b'nei Binyamin min Giva. The people of Binyamin charged them. They came out of Giva. Vayashchisu b'Yisrael b'yemahu shnayim ve'esrim olef ish orza. And they killed on that day 22,000 people, the Jewish people. Meaning, in other words,
everyone.
On the first day of war,
everyone of Binyamin killed the first.
Basically, they killed almost an amount of people corresponding to their ranks, their own ranks. The first day of war was a smashing victory for Binyamin. What's going on here?
It doesn't say how many people they lost.
What's that? We'll see soon. Altogether, until the last day of battle, they might have lost 1,000 people. Maybe. We'll see soon. We'll see the math soon. Whatever it is, the 26,000 people of Binyamin in the first round creamed the 400,000. What's going on here? Who's right? Who's wrong? Let's move on. Okay. Vayischazek ha'am ish Yisrael. Alright. So the people of Yisrael, they kind of gathered themselves together. Vayisifu la'arich milchama b'mokem ha'sha'ochu shem b'yom ha'rishon. They prepared for another battle, for another day of battle. They're getting ready, they're kind of reorganizing their ranks. This was completely unexpected. Right? They know that they're on the right side of the fence. What's going on? They're getting ready for the second day of battle. But they understood something went terribly wrong here. The way it worked in those days was, it was very direct. Failure was immediately attributed to some sort of spiritual problem. So what happened here? What's that? Not necessarily. Yehuda led the battle, but Lamaisa was all of the Jewish people. Vayivku lifnei Hashem. So they were shocked by their loss. And they wept before Hashem ad ha'erev, until the evening. Vayishalu ba'Hashem leimor. And here we have to note something. With everything we discussed above, when they consulted with the Urim v'Tumim, they did not ask, should we go to war? Will we be successful? They didn't ask that question. What did they ask? Let's refer back. They said, Miyale lanu b'tchilo. Who should leave the battle? Lead the battle. A right, person comes to the Rav, not asking the Rav what to do, he's asking the Rav how he should do it. They're coming to the Urim v'Tumim. The main decision they made, but who should lead the battle? So here they understood, perhaps this was a mistake. They backtracked. Vayishalu ba'Hashem leimor. And they asked, this time they consulted once again, and they said, Ha'oisif lo geshes la'melchama b'nei binyamin achi? Should I continue this battle with the people of Binyamin, my brother? This is significant. They're trying to know, where did we go wrong? Where did we go wrong? And part of this attempt to try to figure out where they went wrong is expressed in the fact that today they're saying, should I fight my brother Binyamin? Meaning, and we'll see soon, we're going to work through the different approaches in the Mephoshim. But part of what they were sensing was, perhaps we didn't approach this with enough of a feeling of, these are brothers. Meaning, it may have been the right thing to do, it may have been the right thing to do, but you, in Torah terms, it could be legally, if something is right, you do it. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. You enjoy killing the guy, gives up the hate. As long as it's legally sanctioned, that's fine. Right? What's that? Oh, well, no, I'm thinking in legal terms.
I'm saying, over here, it's kind of a veil of Ishmael, they're going to kill.
Oh, so let's see. So here, the problem was, they were noting, and we'll see soon, and before we'll discuss this, perhaps we were a little bit too detached. Perhaps we should have been considering it, really feeling more of a solidarity with Binyamin. Could be that it would still be the right decision to make, but maybe it should have been harder to make that decision. Maybe we should have been feeling more, I'm going to kill my brother, rather than that Shevet over there, who we really haven't been in contact with so much. So here they're already asking the question differently. Once again, an attempt to try to pinpoint exactly where did we go wrong and how can we rectify it. Should we go to war against Binyamin, our brother? Vayomer Hashem, what is Hashem's response? Alu Eilav, go! Okay. This time they seem to have their backs covered, no? What happens? Vayikrevu b'nei Yisrael al b'nei Binyamin v'yem Hasheni. And the people of Israel approached the people of Binyamin on that second day. Vayetze Binyamin likrosa min agivo b'yem Hasheni. And once again, the people of Binyamin spilled out of the giva on that second day. Vayashchisu b'nei Yisrael oid shmoinas asor elef ish otze. And once again, Binyamin wins round two. They killed another 18,000 men on that second day. Kol Eile Shel Fecharev. All of the 18,000 people killed were warriors. It's not that they went into other town. Now what's going on? This is already shocking. So here already the Jewish people, they already understand, okay, everything is on hold. Everything is on hold now. Vayalu kol b'nei Yisrael v'kol ha'om. So all of the Bnei Yisrael and all the people came via Vayu Beis El. They came to Beis El. They came back to Shiloh. Vayivku, and they wept. Vayeshvu sham lifnei Hashem, and they sat there before Hashem. Meaning, they didn't just come in for a quick consultation. They came in now what we might call an atzeres, right? A gathering, a kenes of introspection, of tefillah. What's going on? Vayatzumu bayomahu ad ha'orev, and they fasted until evening. Vayalu oilos u'shlamim lifnei Hashem, and they brought oilos and shlamim to Hashem to atone for whatever averus they might have done here. So we'll see what those averus might have been. But whatever it is, before we get into the particulars of where did they go wrong, why was this going on, the Altar of Kelm already brings out a very important point here. Once again, let's note the spirit of the Jewish people. Picture that happening in our times. Right? The pious people are beaten one time and then another time. First of all, everybody would be questioning, right? Why is Hashem doing this? Etc., etc. Second of all, it would be perhaps that shows that they're not really the right ones. What was their attitude? We asked Hashem, again, note, they asked the Urim and Thummim, the Urim and Thummim said, go fight. And then they were creamed, right? And yet, what's their response? We're doing something wrong. That was the only response. There's no bitterness. There's no questioning. The only question is, what were we doing wrong? We have to apparently do tshuva for something. So we'll see what that something is.
How could they attribute, I mean, some things come about not because you did something wrong. There's a number of reasons why someone goes through sorrows.
Not in this sort of situation.
In a war?
When you're talking about the people on a national level, when things are happening with the Jewish people on a national level, it reflects what Hashem is trying to convey to
them.
So
let's say for example, there was no question that it was because of a shortcoming.
With what? With I, that's right. That's right. Vayishalu b'nei Yisrael b'Hashem. So the Jewish people once again came and consulted with the Urim v'Tumim. V'shom aron bris ha'elokim b'yomim ahem. That was where the Aron of Hashem was in those days. U'Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron omed lefonov b'yomim ahem. Pinchas ben Elazar was the Kohen Gadol at the time. It's the same Pinchas from the Chumash. Leimar, they asked, Ha'oisif oid lotzeis la'melchomim b'nei ben yomim? Ochi, should we continue going out to fight our brother ben yomim? Im echdo, or should we desist at this point? Vayomer Hashem, and now finally they get the full answer. Alu, go fight. Ki machar etnenu b'yadecha. Now they're already told something they weren't told before. Tomorrow I am going to deliver them into your hands. Yesterday Hashem hadn't said that. Yesterday Hashem said, go fight. Now they understood that what Hashem meant was, go fight and get killed. That was the directive. And now Hashem is already answering, yes, go, and I'm going to deliver them into your hands. So what is going on here? At the end of the day, we're seeing that Hashem approved of this battle, right? At the end of the day, that's what we're seeing. Hashem wanted this battle to happen. Hashem wanted the B'nai Binyamin to be decimated, as we're going to see soon. Almost decimated. But why did it play out this way? So first of all, we're going to build this slope. This is very important here. We'll start with the Ralbag. There are a few different approaches here. You going to say something? Oh, okay. It will start with the Ralbag. There are a few different approaches here. Each one should be properly analyzed, because each one holds its own lessons, which work alongside each other. They're not mutually exclusive. And we'll see even how they come together. But we'll start with the Ralbag, who really just bases it on the Psukim themselves, without drawing on anything outside the Psukim. He says it's all in the wording of the way they asked the question. Meaning, he was saying a very, very sobering point. The war was justified, ultimately. But, and here's an important point, if something is justified, but you did it for the wrong reasons, you might be in big trouble. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that you're okay. Right? That's the classic example of Hashem wanted the Jewish people to suffer in Mitzrayim. Why did he punish Paro? Right? Classic question. Paro's a tzaddik. He's performing the will of Hashem. Well, say even more than that. Any murderer is a tzaddik. If the guy was killed, apparently Hashem wanted him killed. The murderer should get tzchar. Right? Obviously, we understand that it doesn't work that way. What Hashem wants is one question. The question is, how did you utilize your Bechira? Did you do it for the right reasons? And here they were doing it for the right reasons. They were doing it for the right reasons. They were doing it for Hashem's honor. They were doing it for the sake of the sanctity of the Jewish people. But it gets even more subtle than that. They were doing it for the right reasons, but they didn't ask. Initially, what they came and did was, they said, who should lead the battle out? Ah, you're only asking who should lead the battle, you're not asking Hashem? You were deficient in approaching it right. And that, as mind-boggling as it is, was reason for this terrible loss on that first day of 22,000 people. That's the way Hashem operated with the Jewish people in those days. So therefore they lost the first time. Then they understood, oh, we didn't ask. They came back and they asked the question. Now listen to this, this gets so subtle. They asked the question, should we go out to war? Hashem said, go. And they lost again.
They approved the 25%.
Third day, what?
They approved 25%.
They did a little better. They only lost 18,000. Okay. Now the third day they asked, should we go or should we not? And the Ralbag says, this is where the difference lies. Now listen to this, this is so subtle, but it's such an important point. The first day they asked, should we go? The second day they asked, should we go? The third day they asked, should we go or should we not? The Ralbag says something amazing. He says, yes, the second day they understood that they had to ask the question. But, they asked the question knowing what the answer should be. They weren't presenting two sides. It wasn't really a shiloh of should we or should we not. It said, oh, okay, we forgot to ask. Okay, we're going to ask now. And now we can go ahead. The first day they didn't ask the question. The second day was more subtle. They asked the question knowing what the answer should be. Oh, don't do that either. If you're asking the question of Hashem, ask the question. 100% and leave it up to Hashem. Like we said before, don't help the Rav answer the question. Right? Once you come knowing the answer to the question and you present it that way, isn't it okay if I, right? That also they were held accountable for, even though ultimately it was the right step to take. But once again, you ask the question knowing what the answer was, that also is going to be held against you. That also is called not approaching it right. The third day they came and they reworded the question. They said, you know what? We're drawing back now. We don't know. As far as we're concerned, it's 50-50. We don't know. Should we go? Should we not go? Two sides of the question. Two sides of the scale. Now Hashem said, you asked the question properly. Now you're approaching it legitimately. Go, you're going to win. This is mind-boggling. That this subtlety should have resulted in such losses. But once again, this was Hashem squeezing the Jewish people to live up to those supreme standards that he expected. This is how we're seeing Hashem. Sometimes it was heavy costs, but Hashem was keeping the Jewish people at a sublime level. So that's the Ralbag. Okay. We are mamish in the middle of the subject. It's hard to stop here, but we either have to stop here or go on for 3 hours. So I think we are going to have to put the continuation off for next week. To you.
What's wrong with continuing to 3 hours?
What's that?
What's wrong with
that? We would have to have a general vote for.